This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. The Supreme Court of the United States, the highest court in their judiciary system, recently overturned the landmark Roe v. Wade case, thus resulting in more than half of states in the country to ban abortion with almost immediate effect. Now, while this is a legislative move in one country, you know, the U.S. remains a strong influence globally. So I want to talk about how, you know, might this impact debates over access to safe abortion worldwide, and really how we can have frank discussions about abortion without the stigma. So here to discuss that with me today is Amanda Tew, who's working with the International Network for the Reduction of Abortion Discrimination and Stigma, also known as INROADS. Amanda is also a hotline para-counselor with the Reproductive Rights Advocacy Alliance Malaysia, and hopefully, you know, we can get her to share more about that as well. Thank you so much for joining me today, Amanda.
Thanks, Ann. Glad to be here.
Now, I'll start with the very basics of it, right? What is Roe v. Wade? What is this case that has sort of sparked this entire discussion on abortion?
So Roe v. Wade was the landmark decision that was made by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1973, which ruled that pregnant people have a constitutional right to abortion access. So this basically protected the right to abortion across the country, regardless of federal and state laws on abortion. Of course, now without Roe v. Wade, states across the U.S. have the right to enact their own laws on abortion access. As you said, almost more than half will be rolling out laws now after the Supreme Court ruling, which effectively ban access to abortion.
Now, a number of responses to the reintroduction, I guess, of, you know, abortion bans in the U.S. is that this will effectively only ban safe abortions. Now, why is that an important distinction to make? And what are the consequences when safe abortions are inaccessible?
We know that the history of unsafe abortions is very real. We also know that the reality of unsafe abortions across the world affect all people of reproductive age and ability. I would say access to safe abortion affects everyone across the board, not just women. Mm-hmm. We see this with the WHO that recently estimated that around 45% of all abortions are considered unsafe. So having laws that provide abortion access drastically decreases the rate of unsafe abortion. When you consider that 6 out of 10 unintended pregnancies are estimated to end in abortion, you have to consider that abortions will happen regardless of whether a woman has access to safe or unsafe methods. And research has continuously shown us this, that banning or restricting abortion access only endangers the people who need safe methods. It's mind-boggling that governments would resort to ignoring this evidence and continue to push their own people towards unsafe methods through their own legislation and beliefs.
I think what strikes me is, you know, a lot of times the conversation around abortion comes back to people talking about their rights, right? But it's also important to look at it from a public health perspective, isn't it, based on what you've mentioned?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. We have to look at it from a public health perspective about how, beyond that, it comes down to human rights and dignity. Taking away your reproductive autonomy is essentially controlling women's bodies. And, you know, to go into that, I think a common argument that's becoming more widespread now after this ruling is that if one is truly pro-life, you would look beyond forcing someone to carry their pregnancy to term and instead work towards improving things that improve quality of life beyond just giving birth to a child, you know, so you'd improve the welfare state, healthcare funding, healthcare research, institutionalized inequalities, which we know make life harder for those that are more at risk for unintended pregnancies. Improving the foster care system, which we know is overburdened and underfunded everywhere. So I don't actually, when I think about it from that perspective, the dichotomy between using pro-life and pro-choice is, how is it more pro-life when you're not taking care of the life of the person who needs an abortion?
It's not as black and white as some people like to make it seem, isn't it? It's not a pro-life versus pro-choice.
Exactly. And I think that this language might not even be applicable anymore when we look at it. I know that some people are even using the term forced birthers, because what you're really doing is advocating for forced births instead. What happens after that? They're not responsible for it. The person who was forced to give birth is.
Why do you think abortion, or rather the right or ability to access safe abortion, is such a controversial matter when it's basically reproductive autonomy? It's basically down to the decision of the woman.
I think that there has been a lot of religion entering the state, entering the courts of the state, and this is unfortunately what we have seen in America. And this is so unfortunate because, of course, not everybody subscribes to it. And what the Constitution protects is a separation of the state and the church. Unfortunately, this is not the reality that we have seen, because if it were to follow actual public health research, as we know, abortion and safe abortion specifically would be provided across the land. And this is mirrored in countries that have already enacted it and are working towards it, because I think that if governments had the best interests of the people at heart, based on the evidence, there would be no abortion bans.
What does it actually mean for someone to have reproductive autonomy?
I believe that to have reproductive autonomy simply means to be able to make informed decisions over your body and your life, your healthcare decisions, and to be able to control that, meaning if you need contraception, you're able to access it without stigma, without bias, without judgment. And the same goes for other reproductive services, such as safe abortion, as we're talking about, and even the right to choose to be pregnant. A lot of people forget that in being pro-choice, you're advocating for a person's right to their reproductive autonomy in all ways. And this could be somebody choosing that they want to carry a baby to term. It's ironic to me, I think, that a lot of people talk about how perhaps there were health complications, or they were advised against carrying a pregnancy to term, and they have the child now, and there are no regrets about it. They forget that this was a choice they were also allowed to make. When we take away that choice, there are consequences for everybody involved, because we have our bodies and we have the right to make these choices for ourselves and our futures.
And I just want to add here that, you know, with a lot of other things, I think as we've seen during COVID, it's always, you know, my body, my choice. But often when it comes to women's health, women's reproductive rights, it's not always my body, my choice, isn't it?
It's extremely ironic.
All right, let's go for a quick break now and continue our discussion when we come back. I'm joined via Zoom today by Amanda Teo, who is working with the International Network for the Reduction of Abortion Discrimination and Stigma, also known as INROADS. She's also a hotline para-counselor with the Reproductive Rights Advocacy Alliance Malaysia. And we are talking about the importance of access to safe abortions and the impact that the Roe v. Wade case, or rather the overturning of the Roe v. Wade case, is having on discussions about abortions worldwide. We'll be right back after a few quick messages on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Su. And on the show with me today is Amanda Teo, who is with the International Network for the Reduction of Abortion Discrimination and Stigma, also known as INROADS. She's also a hotline para-counselor with the Reproductive Rights Advocacy Alliance Malaysia, also known as REM. And we are talking about the impact that the overturning of the Roe v. Wade case in the United States, what impact that will have on access to safe abortions and conversations about abortions worldwide. And, you know, Amanda, we've been talking quite a bit about the global picture, right? And about what is happening in the United States specifically. But if we look here at Malaysia, right? Safe abortion, or rather termination of pregnancy, is technically illegal in Malaysia, but it is also allowed under very specific circumstances provided by the penal code. Could you elaborate more on that? You know, when and how is abortion allowed under our laws?
So the penal code in Malaysia includes an exception that makes abortion permissible under three circumstances. That is, if the pregnancy involves risk to the life of the woman, and if the pregnancy injures the mental or physical health of the pregnant individual. So with this exception, under the law, you only need one medical practitioner, that's a doctor, to sign off on your abortion. And so in this way, we can see that our law on abortion actually falls into a moderately progressive category on a global scale.
Mm-hmm.
The law is clear about the value of a pregnant person's life, the impact of unintended pregnancy on the individual, and also their decision on unintended pregnancies. So our law is definitely more progressive than almost half of the states in the US now, with Roe v. Wade being overturned.
But I can sense a but there. But in what sense, you know, would it be not as progressive as, I guess, in Malaysia, right? Like we both said, abortion is technically still illegal.
So you caught on to my hesitation. And I think it comes from the fact that our block to abortion access in Malaysia actually comes from our own stigmatization of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of doctors and healthcare practitioners themselves don't recognize this exception in the penal code, where a pregnancy being unintended itself is already, we would say, harmful to a person's mental health and fulfilling the conditions of this exception. So it's not to say that we don't have access to safe abortion. They exist. And even in Sharia law, you'd be maybe surprised to know that permissions exist in religion. So my hesitation comes from the fact that, yeah, it's not necessarily our law itself. Of course, it would be wonderful if the government one day woke up and decided to open it up for everybody. And that is hopefully the goal one day, not to have these blocks in place, but that the stigma itself is so pervasive that even before people reach wanting to ask for abortion or seek abortion access for themselves, they already have a mindset that in a country like Malaysia, it would never be possible.
I'll talk about that stigma more in a bit. But so then, you know, if we talk about access to safe abortions, right, it's about putting the decision back into the hands of the woman themselves. So under our current laws, is that decision really in the hands of the individual when it comes to, you know, terminating a pregnancy? Because like you said, right, ultimately the law still depends on the doctor deciding that that carrying the pregnancy to term would bring physical or mental harm to the woman.
Absolutely. From the cases when we do, I can speak from experience working on the National Abortion Hotline. All people we know who have approached government hospitals for a safe abortion have been denied. It's unfortunate that in, I would say, all government hospitals, abortion by choice, or if somebody were to ask somebody for an abortion without a dire medical reason for it, or even reasons like sexual assault, are not recognized and not honored. So that means that medical practitioners, often in government institutions, don't sign off on it. Even in private hospitals and clinics, it can be hard to find doctors who will sign off on it based on the fear that they might be penalized or have legislation brought down on them. So it is still something that hangs above the heads of our medical practitioners who are able to offer the services. Early abortion, which constitutes most abortion requests, is actually a very, very simple procedure. It is not complicated at all, but I would say there is a lot of stigmatization and hesitance shrouding our abortion access in the country.
Now, like you said, you're a hotline para-counselor with the Reproductive Rights Advocacy Alliance Malaysia. Walk me through what that's like, you know, and I guess from your experience working the hotline, I know you've alluded to it a bit, but what do you think people often misunderstand or even don't understand about what the women who get in touch with the hotline are going through?
That's a great question. So there's a sort of picture that's painted about the type of women who seek abortion for unintended mm-hmm. pregnancies, that they are usually young, unmarried, irresponsible, maybe even promiscuous. However, from our own hotline data, which caters to the entire country, we found that nearly 50% of all our hotline clients are married women. 48% of clients had one or more children at the time of calling us. 32% had two or more children. So this paints a very different picture than what others might like you to believe. You know, there are a myriad of reasons for needing an abortion. To add to that, during the MCO in 2020, we experienced safe abortion requests skyrocketing by nearly 50%. So to us, this was unprecedented and a monumental increase that was brought on by a series of impacts from the MCO, which I'm sure we all felt in one way or another. This includes job losses, salary restrictions, state border lockdowns, shipping delays for medical abortion pills, and again, the very real impacts of social stigma.
What is the mental impact on these women who are seeking an abortion, right? What is going through their minds at that point? Because like you say, right, we have a lot of prejudices and stereotypes against them that are not necessarily true.
Yeah, to continue my example from the MCO, you can only imagine what it's like, say, to be suddenly quarantined and confined in a house where it may not be safe for yourself to disclose that you're having an unintended pregnancy. Imagine being a young girl experiencing sexual abuse from a family member living in the same house, or even a married woman experiencing domestic violence from an abusive spouse. You can also take the example of a husband who's scared for his wife's life because he knows how she's suffered from postpartum depression from the births of their two children who still need their mom around.
Mm-hmm.
These are all scenarios that happened across Malaysia, which we've encountered on our hotline multiple times, so they're not one-off cases. And so access to safe abortion mitigated their circumstances and allowed them, I would say, a new lease of life for themselves and the families that they had to take care of. So we see that the impact on the economy meant that even planned and wanted pregnancies were no longer viable for some families, who had to make extremely difficult decisions for their families and the children that they already had. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that the requests that people make for safe abortion can be incredibly nuanced and complex. And this is much more so than the media or political or religious institutions might want us to believe.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when people can't access safe abortion services, where, you know, I think the first thing that you think of is they turn to the black market, right? Potentially. What are the concerns there?
So this is a huge concern for multiple reasons. I mentioned briefly medical abortion pills, which mm-hmm. can be taken very safely now, up to 95% rate of safety at home. And this is recognized all over the world now, and I think will become a huge method of abortion in America with this ruling. So what has happened is that Malaysia has actually banned the provision and prescription of medical abortion pills in Malaysia, leading to a black market where, as always, there are people who will scam and con innocent people of their hard-earned money. Let's say they only have a certain amount of money that will provide for a safe abortion for them. If that's taken away by, you know, bogus pills that don't actually work, and the pregnancy increases instead with them assuming that an abortion has actually been done when it's not, it instantly kind of increases it to a state of crisis where now an abortion is much more difficult to access in later term, much, much more expensive. And it can be difficult to find a doctor who's willing to provide a later term abortion. Just to reiterate what I said, a black market creates a lot of cause for concern. And this stems directly from legislation that our governments choose to put in place.
Mm. When people seek out these black market services, right, do they know it's dangerous? You know, are they doing it out of a place of ignorance or desperation?
I wouldn't say it's out of ignorance. It's almost out of helplessness, because mm-hmm. imagine being in a state of desperation where you don't even think that abortion is legal. You come across a seller that's willing to offer you pills at a specific rate that you can afford. Maybe they'll negotiate with you and bargain with you. They'll find out how much you have and take that much. This has happened to our hotline clients, by the way, which is why I mentioned it. And then nothing happens instead. And you don't even know what you've consumed and put into your body. Mm-hmm. This, again, is a huge cause for concern. And I think increases the sense of helplessness that people feel around the topic of accessing abortion in our country.
Do you find that people know that there are exceptions allowed under our laws?
No, I have spoken with many medical practitioners who don't even recognize it themselves and are adamant that it doesn't exist. Although we ourselves do know of safe abortion clinics throughout Malaysia. So there's both sides to it, you know. But I would say the majority of people, for them, it's almost potentially more comfortable to just deny it and deny the exception that we have that actually helps many, many, many individuals across our country.
Hmm. Now, this decision to overturn Roe v. Wade is a legislative change within the US, right? It gives decision to individual states within the United States on to decide whether or not they want to ban abortions. It has no direct implications on other countries, but like I mentioned at the start, the US is still a significant superpower globally. It has a lot of influence. And we are seeing so much conversation being generated from this piece of news that came out last Friday. What impact is this move having on global conversations about abortions? You know, are you seeing healthy discussions on it, or are you seeing more divisive ones that are really, you know, going nowhere?
So the US, whether we like it or not, actually has incredible power over the rest of the world when it comes to reproductive health and funding, especially amongst developing countries such as ours.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what we call the global gag rule, which essentially gags or silences organizations that receive funding from the US from speaking out about and offering safe abortion counseling and services, and to their own people, to reiterate, within their own countries. We even have organizations in Malaysia that were impacted by the global gag rule when it was reinstated by Trump in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So through my global work in abortion stigma and access, I know that countries that have unstable political situations, which look to the US for guidance and funding, are definitely in danger of having their own abortion laws now reconsidered after the Roe v. Wade ruling. This is significant when you consider, for example, that the death rate from unsafe abortions in Africa is the highest in the world and is one of their leading causes for maternal death. So there's definitely a lot of neocolonial and imperialist influences at work here, because why should a country all the way across the world have so much say and impact on the laws that govern our bodies here in the developing world?
Mm-hmm.
And yet this is our continued reality. Although, like you mentioned, the conversation is opening up on both ends. I'm hoping that our own Ministry of Health officials don't take the US decision into our own national considerations, because we have a lot of work to do here as is.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen so many people weigh in on this, right? From celebrities to policymakers and politicians from other countries. And I think one statement that really struck me and was shared around quite a bit was that from the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. You know, she said that, and I quote, "People are absolutely entitled to deeply held convictions on the issue, but those personal beliefs should never rob another from making their own decisions." But are you seeing, you know, that line being drawn between personal convictions and imposing them on other people in our society? You know, is that even possible to draw that line, considering how blurred it can be, right, from our own experiences here in Malaysia?
Yeah, I think if anything, this ruling from the US has magnified the need to recognize reproductive autonomy and also to destigmatize abortion access. Pointing to our own country context, I think this points to our need to recognize our lack of things like comprehensive sexuality education in schools. I see a need to recognize how we talk about sexual health, contraception, family planning, and the rights of people simply to decide whether or not they wish to have children and how they wish to go about it and when. So, for example, I can say that our organization, the RAM, started in response baby dumping rates in Malaysia. And I'm sure you know that the rate of baby dumping hasn't changed in 10 years. So we asked ourselves, how can that be when you close the door on talking about reproductive autonomy and safe abortion? You also open a door, and it's a very simple recipe for disaster, I feel. So at the end of the day, we're all affected by this, whether we wish to look the issue in the eye or not.
It ties to, you know, when it comes to access to safe abortion, it ties to so many other issues, right? Unwanted pregnancies, baby dumping, and that eventually goes back to the conversations that we keep having about the need for comprehensive sexual education to educate young people about their own bodies, about their own health. But how do you, you know, Amanda, how do you think we can start or continue having open and frank conversations about access to safe abortion, about women's reproductive rights and autonomy without the stigma? You know, where do we even start as an individual?
Yeah, that's a really important question to ask ourselves. And I ask myself that every day as well, working in this field. So there's a quote that's quite commonly used in the field of advocacy, and I love it. The quote is, "Everyone loves somebody who has had an abortion." So it's probably a given that you know someone around you who has had an abortion, whether you realize it or not, whether they've disclosed it to you or not. And it could very well be someone that you actively care about. And I encourage people to think about that the next time they're having conversations, thinking about this topic, debating it, perhaps questioning the ruling, what its impact is, whether, you know, who around you has had an abortion, and how would you feel, and how would they feel listening into how, you know, you're talking about it. There's a lot of work to be done. And I think with stigma being such a prominent issue for safe abortion access in Malaysia, I would encourage people to educate themselves on the issue. To plug my own organization, you could log onto ram.org, that's ram.org, where there's a lot of information on what the scenarios and what the country context of abortion is like in Malaysia. I encourage people to tune into the protests that are going on around the world. There's a lot and a lot of very powerful storytelling and advocacy and activism that's happening right now from all corners of the world that are responding to this ruling, and see for yourself why it matters and how it can affect you in your own daily life.
And perhaps on that note, right, if someone says, well, this is a problem that's happening in the West, it doesn't affect me here, it doesn't affect women here, how would you respond to that?
That, again, someone around you is probably, someone that you care about has probably had an abortion, and it would be really interesting to see how they were able to go about that abortion and what that abortion experience was like for them in a country like Malaysia. It's not so much about, I would say, you know, this liberal Western ideals and like arguments and rights being brought over, because wherever we live, we have human rights. We have the right to decide over our own bodies. We still live in our bodies no matter where we live in the world. And that is relevant no matter who you are, where you are.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Amanda.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Amanda Teo from the International Network for the Reduction of Abortion Discrimination and Stigma, also known as INROADS. Amanda is also a hotline para-counselor with the Reproductive Rights Advocacy Alliance Malaysia. And we've been talking about the right to access safe abortions, and that's in light of the global discussion that's happening about abortions following the overturning of the landmark Roe v. Wade case in the United States. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download our podcasts on bfm.my or on the BFM app. I'm Lim Suen, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.